Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a boat, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and actually, I'm so excited the sun is shining, and it's not 40 degrees or 20 outside. It's beautiful. This is MJ Network. MJ, in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce, who started this whole thing. And this is going to be so much fun because Shelley Foam is here, and Fast Times in Big City reminds me of growing up in the South Bronx. So this is going to be so cool. So good morning and welcome to MJ Network.
Well, why don't we just do a whole show about your adventures in the Bronx?
Yeah, I had a whole bunch of adventures in the Bronx, let me tell you. And you know something? People don't realize, and they got, you know, the minute I said I taught in a tough school in the Bronx, which I did, they look at me like, how could you do it? It was easy, because the kids looked at me, and they don't even mess with her. And besides the fact that I learned a lot of things about after-school programs with my friend that died, we used to go bowling after school and take 50 of them to the Gunpost Lanes. I'm serious. I played basketball outside. I was the umpire or empress. So, and I did after-school programs in place. So, yeah, the Bronx is okay. So what time period does this take? Is this the 1930s or 40s that this takes place?
No, I wasn't. This is the end of the 50s.
Oh, good.
When I was a starving actor. And there was something called the method. You ever hear of that?
No.
You never heard of method acting?
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever hear of Marlon Brando?
My sister was into that. My sister was
Marlon Brando and James Dean and Julie Harris and the gang. So I was reaching back into that because it's fictional, but it's based on what happened, I guess, when I was there. And I didn't really appreciate everything else. The only thing I knew then was about acting, and I just feel I missed a lot, so I went back and started writing this novel.
Well,
but that isn't
different.
Really the story. You want to hear the story?
Yes, I do, because this is so interesting, because growing up in the Bronx is an experience, and when you tell people you grew up in the Bronx, they look at you, they don't mess with her. Don't mess with the girl.
Yeah. I know, you still sound scary over the phone.
I know, that's what they told me.
Yeah. I'm sitting here shaking. Anyway, there's a writer named, I think her name is Joyce Carol Oates. Did you ever hear of her?
Yes. Uh-huh.
You know, she once said that something you lost or never had drives the work, and I think that's what happened in this case. Because it starts out in Miami. I guess you knew. I grew up in Miami, and we were called the silent generation because we were supposed to be good all the time. And if you had an impulse or a feeling or something, you got in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know you were allowed to have feelings. I didn't know.
No, you
weren't. I remember once. I think it was the eighth grade. I said, do we have to keep doing Silas Marner? And she said, we've been doing Silas Marner since the summer of 1932. You raise your hand one more time, you're going to be cited for being maladjusted, and it's going on your permanent record.
Yep.
Oh, no, Lord, not the permanent record, not that. And we actually believed that our life was over because we raised our hand and wanted to know why we had to keep reading Silas Marner, which is the same as watching paint dry. Did you ever try to read Silas Marner?
Unfortunately, yes, but I was, You see, when I taught my top sixth grade classes, I didn't put them to that. I actually asked them what they wanted to read, and I got in trouble because they wanted to read To Kill a Mockingbird, and I did it anyway.
Yeah, and that's in this book.
Oh, it was excellent. I got in trouble for doing that, but I didn't care. And I did the trial both ways. So you can imagine, my principal looked at me and go, too late now, did it, too bad.
Anyway, that's all part of it, because it was just kind of scary, because if you did go off, there were only a few kind of things you could do. You could be a teacher, you could be a doctor or a dentist. Everything was safe and quiet. Miami was a very sleepy town when I grew up, and you were just sort of stuck. Did you ever try to be good with all your life?
Well, I'll tell you, everybody can't be good all the time.
And yeah, well, I tried it once when I was 13 years old. I tried to be good all day. I tried to be good all day, and I got the worst headache I've ever had. It's awful. I helped a little lady across the street, and she said, get your hands off me. What are you doing?
It was hard
being good all day. Anyway, that's what I was kind of escaping from. But what happens if you don't make it? You're in New York, and everybody's getting off the bus or the train, and they're all trying to make it. So you're competing against the whole world.
I had to walk 20 blocks to school. They didn't even let me take the bus. I had to walk 20 blocks to junior high school. And you know what's worse? My mother was the PTA president in elementary school, junior high school, and high school. And she always said to me, there's something different about you. Are you sure you're my child? I said, yeah, that's because I'm smarter than all of you, and I'm wise to what you're putting me through.
Wow.
Yeah, she was, if I didn't get 100 on a test, if I got 99 and a half, I had to write it over 5 times until I got it all right. So after a while, I just said to her, she would say, what'd you get? I got 100, Mom. Don't worry about it. Not a problem.
Anyway, did you read this book? Did you try to read it?
I read it in an hour.
You're kidding.
I
thought it was going to take an hour and a half.
An hour and 10 minutes. I love Buzz.
I had it timed for an hour and a half, and you beat the record.
That's what they tell me.
You mean it moved that fast?
I loved it. Well, that's because of what it was about, and I felt sorry for Bud because I wanted to smack Rick in the head. So why does he go along with him? I felt so bad. I said, you're going to New York. You never went there before, and you don't know what to expect. And he sort of hooked up with some people, and I'm going like, are you serious? I mean, the diner guy was my favorite guy.
Yeah, see, that's interesting. That's one of the fascinating things. Because how can I put it? I always wanted to have a nice, normal life, which I didn't have, because I didn't have a father, and my mother was never around. So that was one of the reasons I wrote this book. And everybody had a mother and a father, and it was almost an unwritten law that you had to put up with your relatives, no matter who they were.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So that's why he didn't want to go along with Rick, because maybe everybody has a crazy uncle during Thanksgiving. Doesn't everybody have a crazy uncle that's there and they say, don't? But you had to put up with him. So so Bud's mother says, you have to take care of Rick and make sure he isn't in any trouble and all that. And it was like Bud is hearing his mother's voice all the time. So he doesn't want to do it, but can you follow this? It was sort of an unwritten law that you, well, anyway, when I was growing up, if I was living a normal life, then my mother would say, you have to take care of Uncle So-and-so or watch out for him and all that. And you just did it reluctantly, and you just did it. So can you follow that?
Yep, I did, because my mother, She had a chart on the kitchen wall about my schedule and what I was supposed to do, for real. And that could drive somebody. She didn't do it to my sister or my brother, just to me. That's why I figured I was adopted or something. And it said, you know, on Saturday, this, whatever. And I think the worst thing they can make somebody do when they hate it is go to dancing school on Saturday when they'd rather be doing something else with somebody else.
Yeah. There was this pull, just something you do because if you don't, then your life is over because you're not this nice, sweet, good person anymore. So that's why the last thing in the world he wanted to do was to go to New York. And look what Rick did. He told the mobsters that Rick was a leg man, and Rick is just a nice, quiet sports reporter. So he lied, and he had the what was it the contract already typed up. And
so
of course he didn't tell Bud that. So Rick actually sold him out.
He sold him out.
And now what? Because his mother would just have a heart attack or something if anything happened to Rick. So that's on. Can you follow that? So that's on his shoulder.
Yep, I got it.
Oh, good.
Well, we got this is the really the cool part. Now this guy Al Escobar didn't like this guy.
Yes.
He told him that Amy, he met her, however he met her, and she took a valise that belonged to him, and she took it with her. So his job basically was to get the valise, except that poor Rick was hounded by this miserable guy named Ed, who was totally clueless, was afraid of Escobar, because he was afraid if he didn't get the valise, he was going to get jacked out.
Right.
And then we got Jack, who's really a maniac, and he has a stake in this whole thing, too. So, and he didn't know that the valise was missing. So how does Rick do all of that and go into a city and have no idea how to...
How does Bud do all that?
Yeah,
how does Rick do all that? It's Bud. So it's a huge juggling act that he has to go through.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know what's going on. All he knows is his mother's gonna something awful's gonna happen if he doesn't get Rick out of this jam. And then he meets these people, and luckily, he ran across Connor Larkin, this Irish person in the diner. You remember that?
Yeah.
And when I was a starving actor, there was a guy named Aegon, and I used to go to see him down around Sheridan Square, and he was an existentialist, and he would tell me all about the meaning of life and everything. And then in my mind, I switched, and I wanted someone who was Irish there. And I didn't know it was all going to be connected, because I don't know what's going to happen when I start writing these things. And I didn't know that Connor somehow was connected to the IRA. You know, did you get that part?
I got everything, trust me.
Oh,
Where'd
great.
You have my question?
Oh, great. Why don't you explain it to me?
Well, this was the guy that I really felt bad for, because they were driving him crazy, and that's Chip. And he gave him certain information. And why does Bud has to bail Rick out? Because they said if he doesn't. And he is the leg man, correct? So he had no choice but to go get information, and he gets help. So who is Catherine? And he goes to the diner. This really started the plot. This really set it going. And he met Larkin, and I said, there's something about him I don't trust. But what can I say? And what he did to Rick, what he did to Bud was not very nice. I could smack him in the head.
Yeah, well, he's using him because in his mind, he's trying to put a circle around everything, and it's just Greenwich Village and a couple of blocks, and he goes to the Irish pub. He goes to the Irish pub, and he sits there, and he waits for someone to come through the door and adds him to his little his little set of vignettes that he's writing, and he's going to have that published. So Larkin has this sort of dream world, hoping that Reardon doesn't find out where he is and awful things. But of course, Bud doesn't know anything. He just knows that there's this garrulous guy who runs the diner and knows everything about New York City and the theater world or whatever, because he's got nothing going for him. Does that make sense?
Well, you know what I really like is the fact that I thought about this as Larkin did this for him, and I'm saying, what a cool way to know where you're going. He gave him index cards with directions and how he can get to different places. Now, that was really clever, because this way, if he got lost, it's his own fault.
Yeah.
He has to process all the information, and Bud was not exactly the brightest light bulb on the block. So what
well,
can
he's
do?
Really sharp in Miami. How can you be sharp
in
New
York?
You just get engulfed. You don't know what can happen. And in fact, he was lucky he got his duffel bag back.
Yeah, I know.
Because he gets off the train and some guy grabs his duffel bag. And of course,
I remember that
point. a real New Yorker, this woman that he knocks over and all that, she gets up and says, you're new in town, right? You know,
It happens now. Sure, because you used to see people on the train. I used to go everywhere on the train because I didn't have the buses didn't go where to my college, to Hunter College. So I had to take the train, which is no fun. And what can I say? But it's just everything. It hasn't changed that much. I think it's gotten worse. So he managed to get around, and he has to find Amy. And Amy, she said she's going to be the next Laura in a movie, and she's going to be Marilyn Monroe. Why did she think that? And that's why she went to New York, supposedly.
Well, first of all, she's been...
Method acting.
She's been... That was the whole point, because at that time,
yeah.
at that very time, Marilyn Monroe was married to Arthur Miller. Do you remember him?
Vaguely.
You know, he was this great playwright who wrote Death of a Salesman and all that. So she doesn't want to play ditzy blondes in Hollywood anymore, and she marries Arthur Miller, who then takes her to New York, and then she's going to somehow get into the Actors Studio or take lessons from Lee Strasberg or something and learn how to be real. And I don't know if you remember, but Rick has these magazines on his rack in his little bungalow, and there's a picture of Marilyn Monroe on the cover, so that's why Rick comes up with this idea to tell, because she didn't know, and then Rick tells Amy, you know what, you look just like Marilyn Monroe, and you're going to, you know, and he gives her this whole snow job, and of course he's stoned on daiquiris anyway, and he's looking for some way to get tips on Escobar's poker game. It's called a tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know what a tell is?
Yeah, so I got that, and she sort of had somebody telling her what to do. It was like signaling her.
Yeah, so she's you know, she's just a sweet girl from the Midwest, and she's a believer, and her mother says things to her like, honey, someday, you know, the Lord is going to take care of you and all this kind of stuff. So she's very naive. You must have gotten that out of it, that she is like Laura in the Glass Menagerie, that she's a believer, that she believes in people, and it all, of course, falls apart on her. Can you follow that?
I have somebody. Yep, I did.
Oh, good.
There are a lot of people listening, by the way.
Really?
And then, yeah, there are. Yes, they are. And
you mean right now, this minute?
Yep, sorry about that. They are listening.
People are actually listening to our conversation.
You know something?
It's like a party line, I guess.
No, it said if they call into the, they don't have to call into the number. You don't have to, you know, call into the number. They remind everybody, and then they just click on the listen button. And I didn't know that so many people listen and read my reviews. They go like, why are they doing this to me? I have gotten, the last week, I've gotten the most unusual requests for interviews of people that are really well known in top in areas that I felt uncomfortable, and I turned some down. I said, how can I, you know about this, but I don't know. The guy said, I'll send you the book. Don't worry, you'll figure it out. Oh, God.
Oh, well,
yeah,
anyway, back to what we were talking about.
I love Amy.
In my memory, New York was a sweet little town in the sense
that
everything was all... everything was accessible, and you knew exactly where to go. If you wanted, in fact, if you wanted somebody rubbed out or something, you went to Little Italy and you looked for Johnny Diamond.
Oh, nice!
And then you could say, "Hey, I want my wife rubbed out, okay?" And or whatever. Even in acting, if you said, "I want to be realistic," you knew that you would take lessons from so and so. If you wanted to be avant-garde, then you try to hook up with Joseph Chaykin, and I forgot, it was called the Open Theater or something. So everything was happening at this point, and the reason I wrote it, one of the main reasons, is because I missed out on everything that was happening. I didn't know what was going on with Fidel Castro, and that's all part of this story too. And I didn't know he was up in the mountains of the Sierra Maestro, and he was going to come down and take over in Havana. And then, of course, if he takes over Havana, what's going to happen to Reardon and the other mafia guys who have money in the casinos in Havana? So all of these things are vibrating against each other. Can you follow that? And the IRA and
I got it. Trust me. I got that part. Now we got to get to Amy. Well, she went to someone that put her in touch with the caregiver or somebody at the studio where Greta Kagan was having her method classes. So he puts him onto that, and then
She went to the actor's studio because that's where Marilyn Monroe is supposed to be. So that logically, she would go to the actor's studio. And this guy in the actor's studio is the caretaker. Told her to go. So everything is connected. Nothing is vague. There's a reason why everybody does everything, but it all spills over. So this happens, that happens.
Well, the two guys I hated were Scooter and Stash.
Oh, really?
I didn't like, they're crazy. I was afraid for Bud because I wasn't sure at one point who was on which side. And they wouldn't hesitate to kill him. And they don't care. They had their own agenda in mind. So,
he doesn't know that.
He doesn't know a lot of things.
Oh, my God, you know, he runs into this person or that, and that happens. When I was a starving actor, you run into people, and all of a sudden your life is ruined. you shouldn't have said, "Okay, I'll do that," or "Oh yeah, I'll go with you to meet somebody," or whatever. I had a friend named of Joan Malinsky who changed her name to Joan Rivers. You ever heard of her?
Yes, of course.
You never heard of Joan Rivers?
So I did. Yeah, I interviewed her on my radio show.
So she was our age. Tony Rivers was our agent, and in fact, last time I saw her, I said, "Your name is Molinsky, and you're from Scarsdale, and Tony's a Native American, and you stole his name. How did he take the news?" And she said, "He hates me, hates my guts." But anyway, the story is that I would hang around with her because she knew agents and stuff. And I went with her once, and we were going to see this famous Asian name of Archer Winstead or something like that. So she goes inside the office, and I hear all this screaming and yelling and everything, and she comes back out. Her blouse is all ripped. Her hair is hanging down in front of her eyes. She's crying, and she says, "No worries, Shelley. I got us a reading." And I said, "I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this." But it's the whole point is you meet the right person or the wrong person, and your life can go this way or that way, and that's the way New York was. Because everything is vibrating, everything's moving, and there you are at 2 o'clock in the morning. You say, "Well, I'm wasting time. I should be out there, you know, doing something with myself." And it just keeps bubbling and vibrating 24 hours a day. So that's why it was called the city that never sleeps. But anyway, it was all, there was a clarity about it. I don't know if that's the right word, or accessible, or whatever. If you wanted a place to stay and you were a starving actor, you could go to the Hotel Chelsea. Did you ever hear of that?
Yes.
Remember that? And there were 250 rooms there. And there were rooms for starving actors and old vaudeville people, and then there are people that have been there forever who have their own apartments, and they have a kitchen. And there's the Hotel Chelsea in itself of the whole world. So you plug into that, and you get a place to stay. Can you follow this?
Yep.
Everything somehow or other made some kind of sense if you had the right connection. And now it's all scrambled. I think it's all scrambled together. So you can't afford to be a starving actor now. Can you imagine? I had an apartment on 44th Street, right in the middle of the theater district at that time, and you couldn't possibly afford to be a starving actor in New York nowadays. So that's why I wanted to go back to this world and where anything was possible, and in some madcap way, it all made sense. And you run into a guy named Scooter. His uncle is, you know, in a numbers racket, but
yep.
The front is this Italian restaurant. So you wouldn't know that. You would walk into the Italian restaurant and the music's playing and you don't know that this uncle is hooked up with the mafia, would you? Or at least I wouldn't anyway. If I was Bud, I would know what was going on. Can you follow that?
I know it's. Yep, I can. This is my problem. I follow things. That's what everybody gets upset about. What can I say? But this, I looked up something. I did some research on one of the families that you put in the book, and that's the Trafficante family, and they're still around today. They're a real mob family. So that's
really?
What made it even. Yes, they are. You see, this is what I do when I read a book. Yeah, they're still around. You don't want to be part of them, but yeah, they're still around. There's a whole bunch of them that are still around, and they were quite dangerous. So when you wrote that in the book, I go like, wait a minute, they're real. And that's how I know what you wrote was credible. So we have that. Now, who puts him on? Well, there's Chester. And Chester tells him where to find Amy. And then Bud has to meet Amy, but she doesn't really want to deal with him right away. She's not really sure what his point is.
I know. Well, she's now spooked by everything. The city
yeah,
has spooked her. The city has spooked her, and it's only. Remember the scene with the teddy bear?
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually used to do that scene for an audition. So because of that scene with the teddy bear, she now sort of trusts Bud, or was impressed. And of course, Bud has never acted before in his life. For him, the scene with the teddy bear was just out of freaking out because he thinks, you know, some mobster has been following him. So it's all that energy just pours out of him. and he grabs the teddy bear and he does this scene. And that's why she's amazed that he did that, because there's this nice guy doing the teddy bear scene, and that's why she kind of trusts him. Can you follow that?
Yep, I can. I got
it. Oh, good. That's three in a row.
Oh,
my God, maybe we're
communicating.
Everybody complains
about the fact that I get the book the right way. And I don't know. What can I say? If you hear a beep, I don't care. I don't answer my phone. Not this one anyway. So from the point, she agrees to hear him out. From this point on, things get dark. Because Reardon is not happy because he didn't know why Bud was going, and he didn't realize what was missing. And then Larkin, who's really, he thought was his friend, why does he decide to ditch Bud? Why does he tell him he doesn't want him to come to the diner anymore?
Because
nice.
then Reardon
yeah.
will find him.
Yeah. He doesn't
and
want
Reardon
to be found
finds
either.
Him, he might, you know, he might ice him and put him down in the East River somewhere. Because Larkin used to be part of the IRA, but he skipped town. Remember, Larkin admits that the reason he's there in the first place is to escape from the IRA, because he doesn't want anything to do with them anymore. So Larkin is trying to, like I said before, he's trying to put this sort of invisible fence around his life that he's now a writer, and he goes to the Irish pub and they sing songs and everything's sweet and people come in and out of his diner and he collects these vignettes and they put them together in a book and it's sort of like a travelogue or a tourist book for people that want to see sweet Greenwich Village. Isn't that quaint? And that's his life, and he doesn't want anything to disturb that.
I never went to Greenwich Village until before my sister died under strange circumstances. And my niece was here with her kids from Florida, and they dragged me to Soho because that's where they wanted to go shopping. And I had never been there before, and it was an experience that everybody should have. Because I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know about the stores or anything. It's an experience everybody should have. The stores were great. Of course, walking around for 10 hours didn't help. And then going back uptown to Broadway, and then going back to all the stores over there, my feet were killing me. But you have to do it once. You have to do it once, because New York City is different. It's not like every other place. And I think that my favorite place I went that day, and I don't know if it's still there, was Dylan's. It's ice cream and candy in two floors. And I don't eat candy. And at one point, I can't eat ice cream anymore because I'm allergic to milk. But back then, it was really good. It was different. New York is a city that if you can't find something that's special to do, then you really are blind, because it's different. But you have to know where to go.
Yeah, what I'm suggesting is that it was extremely simple at the end of the 50s.
Yeah.
Even though everything was happening, you could go to Greenwich Village and the cobblestone streets and
yeah.
everything. And and the buildings weren't tall anymore. They were small. And you could go into Peter's shop, who's gay. Did you like that scene when he goes and he gets a different outfit?
Uh-huh. That was cool. With the guy? Oh, my God, that was so cool. I wanted the guy to help me. That was so cool.
what he's learning is, he doesn't know this, but he now has to become an actor and pretend, and he now has a new outfit. He doesn't have his tennis sweater anymore because he's freezing to death. And he now has this outfit, you know, with the leather patches on the sleeves and all that. And he might pass for a playwright like Tennessee Williams. And actually, I was in a play that Tennessee Williams was writing down in Key West.
Oh, whoa.
And he came up to Coral Gables to do the play, and he gave me this tiny, small part that when they did the movie, Bruce Dern got the part because I wasn't as tall as Bruce Dern, who also, I used to run into him at Tony Rivers' agency. But anyway, that even that figures that the Tennessee Williams and looking like Tennessee Williams after getting this gay outfit from Peter, he now is able to go to this party, and all of this connects. It all connects, and what scene is he doing? He's doing a scene from the Glass Menagerie, and who wrote that?
Mm.
Tennessee Williams,
mm-hmm.
and of course, Amy thinks that's great because she can now play a part of this sweet girl who trusts everybody and playing the part that her mother would love.
That is so cool. But before I forget, because I don't want to forget, Wednesday, the author of Some Kind of Truth, Wesley Wilson, will be here. That's some powerful story. And on Thursday, you want to tell how they test my brain? I had to read 3 books for Thursday. Dana Perry, R.G. Belsky Dick has 3 books and a new series with a new character, Nikki Cassidy. You don't want to mess with this one. The Nowhere Girls, Last to Die, and The Lone Ones.
Since you've read my book in 1 hour, all you need is, 3 hours? So
not
no
even.
Problem, right?
Not even. Not only that, I had to come up with questions for all 3 books at the same time, and that's not fair to test my brain, but that's okay. Well, I have a master's in a lot of degrees, and I have a master's in reading. And my professor that taught me how to do this and how to look deep into a book we do all discussions every couple of weeks on my radio show. And we did one about iatrogenics and learning disorders last week on Wednesday. So he keeps me busy and keeps my mind going. And I don't pick the topic. He tells me what I have to research. Then I do the talking points, and I actually have to answer some of the questions. So it's his fault. That's why.
Oh.
That and the fact that my mother made me read 10 books a week, and don't ask me how I did it. Yeah, it's like no big deal. So
and, of course,
like
the main thing is you survived the Bronx.
Yeah, I did.
And if you can survive the Bronx, you can do readings and you can do all kinds of things.
Well,
that's not really a challenge for you.
If you're the teacher in the Bronx, you can do anything is right. And the kids looked at me, and I'm little. And most of the children were, African-American. And I had come back from Puerto Rico. This was hilarious. And one of my kids looked at me. He was in fifth grade. And he says, "Your black came out, Miss Wardloff." I go, "Don't tell. Now you know the truth." I was hysterical laughing. He cracked up. He said, "Only you wouldn't." I said, "Why would I get upset?" I said, "You're all my people, and you're stuck with me. What can I say?" I never had a class that ever said they didn't want to come to school. But when I taught reading, they finally let me out of my classes. I taught 3 grades at a time, 2, 4, 5, and 6, 1, 2, and 3, because it was like a transitional program, and my principal didn't know how else to torture me. When I finally got the reading program, it was in my glory. I taught 5th grade, 4th grade, and you would think, I was very lucky, because not once in the 19 years did any group ever say, "Oh, God, we have to go for reading." As a matter of fact, when the teachers threatened not to let them come, they snuck out to come down.
Tell me you didn't make them read Silas Marner. Please tell me.
No, I did not. I was very original.
Bless your heart.
Because they were reading different things. They had to do vocabulary and word recognition one day, and I picked stories where they could actually, understand how to decode and how to do structural. Now they love that. They left phonics. I didn't do too much. But when they had to do comprehension, I didn't use a reader because I couldn't stand it. So I would Xerox stuff about stuff they were interested in. So I learned about wrestlers, and I learned about singers, and I learned about rap songs, and I learned about baseball and basketball, and I wrote some stories for them on their level with questions. So, no, they didn't get bored, no. Because I said if they come down, yeah, I did it because, you know what, I had five groups of children, and they were supposed to only be like, you know, eight kids in a group, and somehow 15 used to sneak out of the room. And then I had a group that came at 6:30 in the morning out of nowhere and said, we came because they said, you know what to do. I go, why do I know what to do? Who told you that? And they came every single day from 6:30 in the morning to 8:30 every single day for a whole year, telling me, you're the best. You did a great job. I said, I didn't do anything. You decided you wanted to learn to read, and you challenged me. I said, and what can I say? So
this sounds like coal miner's daughter, Loretta.
Yeah.
I think we found something you can do.
That's right. I didn't know I could do it, but I could.
So Fran found something she can do.
I love
doing
it. Anyway,
is there anything else we can talk about the
book?
Yes,
we got Reardon. Now, what happens when Reardon, it all comes together. So what happens when he finds the suitcase? And Escobar, well, how does he feel about the truth about that?
Oh, you mean it? Didn't you get the part at the end where Traffic County calls up and said he's not coming, he's going to Cuba?
Yeah, no, I didn't want to be, yeah.
Instead, so.
He didn't like that.
Yeah, maybe you read it too fast, but Escobar.
No, I know, I remember that. I didn't know if you thought that was a spoiler. So Traffic County calls up.
Yeah,
and
it is
and
a spoiler.
That's why I didn't say
it. In fact, the fact of what's in the briefcase,
yeah,
is what this all hinges on, and of course,
yep.
And of course, Bud has no idea this all hinges on a suitcase. On a briefcase. He has no idea, you know, what this silver line briefcase has to do with anything. He is just lost. He's lost in Manhattan, and then. And then, you know, Reardon is freaking out so much that he figures that this girl is a believer. So she must have stashed the suitcase, the briefcase, close by in a church. Did you get that? And he comes up with all kinds of ways that Bud can spend all night somewhere in Brooklyn somewhere looking for this briefcase. Which of course is ridiculous, but
well,
I have to account for Reardon and the way Reardon is thinking, and Reardon is freaking out. And
Reardon is not anybody that you want to be friends with or cross. But
you,
then
or
Escobar,
you, cross.
You don't want to be friends with him either. There was nobody basically.
And what about
to trust.
Liam? What about Liam? This tall.
Yeah.
Bruiser of a henchman. You don't want to mess with him either, do you?
You want to mess with any of these people.
Basically. And Scooter's just having a great time. Scooter's idea is that someday he'll be in the numbers racket too. He's going to work his way up. And he has this dream. Everybody's got something going that might clash with somebody else, or they can use somebody and then drop them.
Well,
it's all happening at the same time.
Well,
everybody's got their own agenda.
This is very true, but then people today all have their own agenda also. You don't know what to expect sometimes. And you know, I felt so bad for Bud. But you like him, and you really want him to sort of be okay. So they find the suitcase, and then what? How did you create? I mean, some of the scenes were so graphic that I could actually picture the stores and the diner, and, of course, the guy that made the clothes for him. I could use him because my mother used to... My mother used to pick, my sister was very thin. I was very heavy when I was younger, not anymore. So I wore a size 16. I'm a size 2 now. And she wore a size 2 always. So we would go to the stores and she would pick out the clothes and I would have to wear them in a bigger size, which is horrible. So I could have used this guy to pick out something for me because the first time I was allowed to buy my own clothes, she actually called the storekeeper to make sure she gave me what she wanted. For real. Forget
but
you it. So I couldn't. Yeah, she, oh, please. She picked out orange pants. I said, Mom, no one wears orange. No one wears orange pants. No one. So,
right.
How did you create the look and the images of the city and the people? Did you do research? Or did you pictures of New York when it was, you know, different?
Well, I knew New York was in the back of my hand. There were little
yeah.
tiny details that I didn't know. I didn't know that I knew that at the Automat they had the greatest coffee in the world because it was ground, it was freshly ground. But I didn't know that you walked up there and the handle was the shape of a dolphin's head. I didn't know that. And that may not seem like anything to you, but it meant something to me. It made it all very real because I'm trying to remember what it was like. And I finally looked it up, and I went through all kinds of things, and I found out the shape of the you know, it wasn't just a faucet or something. It was a dolphin's head. And somehow or other, I thought that was really neat. It made it real for me. So most of the stuff I knew, but there were some things I didn't know. Like I knew all about desert boots. Did you know that was a big rage in 1959?
Before many people.
Yeah. Did you ever see a pair of desert boots?
No, I never did. As
soft,
a matter of fact,
soft and suede and all that, and I knew.
I wish.
I knew. Yeah, I know. I knew that in Greenwich Village, that was part of the outfit. So those details made something to me because they made it all real. And Rienzi's coffee house, and I remember that. I remember that Washington Square had grass that doesn't have grass anymore. I think it's concrete, isn't it?
Mm.
But then when I was a starving actor, and I knew that people were playing folk songs, and I knew what they were playing. I knew they were playing Goodnight Irene, and I knew the Weavers.
Mm.
I know all kinds of stuff, and I was just recapturing everything I already knew. But there were little tiny, well, I didn't know exactly what the statue was like when you get off the subway at Sheridan Square. I didn't know exactly what the monument or whatever it was of General Sheridan was. So I had to look it up to see exactly where it was, so I could believe it. So all of those things. I had to know that Peter's, well, I had to imagine, but I had to know where Peter's little emporium, his little lavender emporium was, and I had to know it was within walking distance of Reardon's diner. I had to know it was only three blocks around the corner on Barrow Street. So all those details are there because otherwise it wouldn't have worked. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I'm surprised you didn't include, when I grew up, just yesterday, I haven't grown up yet, I refuse to grow up, and Fordham Road was the big rage back then, and I wasn't allowed to go by myself. And basically, I was only allowed to go certain places. Then when I got into college, for some reason, I would join a house plan, and they made me the social chairman. So I got stuck calling all the guys and all everybody to make the parties. So I grew up real fast. Yeah, I was, you know, I was cute and adorable, so they figured, what the heck, you know, we'll let her do it. It was the worst job in the world. I mean, but growing up in the Bronx makes you tough. It makes you streetwise, too. And even though I'm up here, I even look behind me. And if somebody's walking too fast behind me, I let them go in front of me. It's something that you grow, you know, when you grow up in the Bronx. And I didn't go to Manhattan too often, except to watch my friends play in Madison Square Garden because they were basketball players. So I was able to do that. And
yeah, well,
only
well,
if I called.
I couldn't do that because I was going back to New York where you would get off in Greenwich Village and you were safe. You were in this cute little village.
Yeah, you know, you were in when I grew up.
And everything was cute, and you and of course, of course, Bud had no idea what a gay person was. So when he's shopping for a jacket around Barrow Street at Peter's Lavender Emporium, it was a whole new thing.
Well, what's going to happen next? Are you writing a sequel?
No.
I have one more announcement that I promised my niece I would make after. Are you writing a sequel to this? Is Bud going to go someplace?
No, because it all resolved. All the energy, I put everything I had into it, and it all resolved. And I don't have any questions anymore. I don't have anything driving me. I went through all this. I relived it, and it rings true, and it works. And right now it's got 14 five-star reviews on Goodreads. Did you know there was something called Goodreads?
Well, I gave it 5 stars on Goodreads myself. I'm going to do that before later. And unfortunately, Amazon doesn't love me because somebody hacked into my Amazon and claimed that I wrote a review. I never write anything bad, ever. And when it comes to this, I'm going to put the 5 stars on Goodreads later. Don't worry about that. Everybody reads what I write, by the way. And then
okay.
After I posted
That's
your review
break.
On my Just Reviews, but I will post it on Twitter, which is X, whatever that means, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And if you post a review on if I post a review on LinkedIn, in 5 minutes, there's going to be a lot of views. The last time I posted a review on LinkedIn, I had about 1,000 reviews for one review.
Three. Really?
I don't know why.
Wow.
Yeah, this is why. I'm getting an awful lot of people that are interviewing me, and I just finished reading Baldacci's new one, which is phenomenal. You would love it. And I read Degoni. But before I forget, because I promised I would do this, on April 26th, I'm so excited, my niece has a whole bunch of songs that dropped. The new one is dropping on the 26th. Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube, and the streaming platforms. And the title of the song by Carly is Leave Me. And I promised I would say that because I'm so excited for her. And I actually listened to the song. This one's really good. So I'm going to tell, you know, do this on all my shows, I promised her. But what's next for you? What are you writing?
I don't know. Let me think of some way to put it. Somehow, all I know is the character's name is Charlie, and he's...
Oh, nice.
And he is, I'm thinking of calling it Charlie and the Grifters, because he's...
Oh, nice.
And he's lost. He's just a handyman, and I'm grappling here for some way to put it, but my neighbors are all, I don't know, a lot of them are around 70 years old or something like that, and all
mm-hmm.
they do is mow the lawn, and they find some little physical thing to do, to work on the lattice work, or to trim this, or to fix that, and that's all they're doing, and somehow it just hit me that can you imagine that you're 60 or 70 years old and this is your life? You're sharpening tools and you're mowing the lawn and you're fixing the lattice work and you're fixing the driveway. They all have these little projects, and I just think, God, that is so depressing. So I wanted to give Charlie an adventure to get him the hell out of the neighborhood and do something that was exciting, venturesome, or something like that. Can you follow that?
I gotcha. I retired from teaching when my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Otherwise, I probably never would have retired. I might have finally, after a lot of years, transferred because the principal of my school didn't care about my children. They didn't care about anything, and I didn't want to deal with her. But if she didn't have Alzheimer's, I probably would still be doing it right now. And that's why when my sister, right before she died, she said, why don't you write a book because you're becoming a couch potato? I go, aren't you sweet? So I did. I wrote a book called My Name is Bertha. It's about our life growing up in the South Bronx. I thought she was going to kill me. I wrote it all together. I wrote it in 3 books, but Shelley, thank you so much. This has been fun, let me tell you. And if you're doing, when you write the book, and make sure I get it, please.
Yes, yes. And I hope you include the 20 blocks you had to walk.
Did you tell me you had to walk 20
blocks to school or somewhere?
Yeah, I did. I had to walk 20 blocks to junior high school, and I had to have I had a cell phone with me when I was allowed to have one, and I had to make sure that I called my mother when I got there. As a matter of fact, my mother used to call the school when I was teaching to make sure I got there, for real. She drove me crazy. And there was one day that it was 22 inches of snow. This is a true story. And the guy that used to drive me, who wasn't very pleasant, we walked 2 miles to the school in the snow. And my mother called the school and said, my daughter's not coming. She's, well, it's too late. She's here. I lived too close. I lived too close that they said, you know, you had to be there. So, yeah, I probably would still be doing it at that. So then I decided to do this. I said, why don't I do a radio show? And I was very blessed because somebody gave me an hour on her network, never thinking that I would be doing this. This is the most fun you could ever have. Because if I had to sit home and do nothing, I would lose my mind. So reading the books is fun because they're all different. Doing the shows are different because I get to make up the questions and pray I know what I'm doing. And I do reviews
right.
for Just Reviews. And I just do this because I love doing it. And you know what bothers me is that when you tell somebody, this is what I do, they look at me, oh, that's nice. I go, you don't know the half of it, so why bother to tell you? But Shelley, if you decide to write the book, let me know. And are you going to do another tour with Partners in Crime? Because I've done mine with Partners in Crime for all of my horror series.
And I hope the horror isn't walking 20 blocks in the Bronx.
20 blocks is nothing. I was heavy, so it took me a while with school bag. But thank you so much. Everybody, get out. Do something. Don't sit home. Get yourself something. And Shelley, thank you so much. Everybody, have a great day. And bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks.